Species.
Unite.
Species. Unite.
So when it started here in Nigeria and we opened the first vegan restaurant and there was also no vegetarian restaurant, people were saying, you know, that's crazy. Why do you do that? But I knew kind of that time is on our side.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We have a favor to ask. If you like today's episode and you have a spare minute, could you please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts? It really helps people to find the show. This conversation is with Hakeem Jimo. Hakeem is co-founder of Veggie Victory, Nigeria's first plant-based food tech company. Hakeem, thank you so much for doing this today. I'm really excited to have you here.
Yeah, thank you, Beth.
You were born and raised in Germany and went vegetarian in Germany. And I lived in Germany as a kid until my last year of high school.
Oh, cool.
And I went vegetarian when I was like 13, when there was zero. you couldn't get a salad without ham. And and I was like, oh my God, somebody understands, because I didn't know a soul that was vegetarian. So let's just start back then.
But it's not as bad as I lived for a few months in upstate New York, and there was one place in town that they had a donut with bacon on it.
Oh, come on.
I'm telling you, you know, I was just laughing. I was so bad, I was just laughing.
I mean, now Germany's like the vegan mecca. You know, there's so much good vegan food. But back then, it was not so good.
Yeah.
It really wasn't. So you're born, raised in Germany. Talk to me a little about that. Like, was there anything going on in your life at that point that around food, around animals, that kind of led you in this direction or path?
My mother is German. My father is actually Nigerian. But I was born and raised in northern Germany, close to Hamburg, in the 70s. And I did everything there, school. And then I moved to a farm that was 100 kilometers from Hamburg. I was a teenager and I lived in the countryside on a farm. It was a village with 160 people. And I always say more cows than people. What they do there is some families in the village come together and then they buy a whole pig. And then the butcher comes to your farm and then processes the pig. It sounds brutal. But in a way, compared to animal farming, it's actually the artisanal way of eating animals. And I think if we would be there, we would be much further in our vegan cause, you know. But the problem is obviously, don't need to tell you, it's the animal farming. Once you get completely disconnected. So they had this pig and then it gives so much. And then we had freezers, I think three big freezers. And it was every day there was meat, you know, and that's really the cliche German, you know, meat and potatoes, you know, it's really like that. And something was said, this is too much. And I intuitively just went for the potatoes, some vegetables and the gravy. So those were my early stories. But it was much later at the university in Hamburg that they now introduced an alternative meal. So that was in the mid 90s now. And that was actually a vegetarian meal. And the word vegetarian just came up. Vegan was, there was no idea what veganism is. It happened that I was 19 years a vegetarian. Had I knew that there was veganism, I would have done that a long time ago. But there was no role models, and vegetarian at that time, there was nothing. But what really triggered it was there were some food scandals. Back then, I remember there was a chicken farm. What they did is they sprayed the chickens with nicotine, you know. And when you're a teenager, all the adults are telling you, don't start smoking. And then you hear that they're actually spraying the animals with nicotine. It's like,
wait, why were they doing this?
Crazy. It's for disinfection, you know? And I actually, now when I became a journalist, I started researching. You can still find that. That scandal, Pohlmann, that was a big scandal. And that was one of the first media things that started. And then later on, the foot and claw disease, and there was the fish in the North Sea had something. And I just said, wait, I mean, and we are eating all that? And then you start, yeah, connecting the dots, you know?
And so then that was it. You were vegetarian.
Well, vegetarian, you know, for 19 years. Then you realize somebody starts telling you, wait, well, dairy is also not so cool. But that was later. I think a lot of people can relate to it. It's a journey. You know, you start and you learn more and then you suddenly get the environmental aspect. What really worked for me is I started visiting Africa back then. And when I was still meat eating, my stomach had a problem every now and then eating some meat somewhere, you know. When I was a vegetarian, I was fine. You know, no problems. You could send me anywhere. They kept on saying you have a running tummy because you ate some salad. The salad was not clean, but it was actually the meat. You know, the disinformation is really hilarious. You know, I got typhoid fever from eating meat. Yeah, but you put things together. That was basically my story. That you immediately feel better. That's very important now in Africa. The health story. It's not so much the ethical aspect. Animals. We don't have so much animal farming yet. You know, but it's going there.
It's coming, right? And it's getting there.
Yep, and that's the thing. People are not so aware about this animal farm because it's just starting. But health is definitely what's catching them totally, because we have very bad health infrastructure and people are on their own, really. They have no money anyway. Lots of people in Africa and nobody has health insurance, very few. So if you have a health problem, that's really a big problem. Hypertension, all these non-communicable diseases.
And that's like because more meat, the more meat that comes in.
Yeah, it's one of the things, like with colonialism, diets changed. Traditionally, African meals are, many of them are plant-based. And up to today, it's maybe not so clear to everyone, Africa doesn't really eat much meat. Just the United States with 300 million people or 330 eats more meat than the entire African continent with 1 billion. I have some numbers because it's so staggering. Like an average African eats only 5 kilograms of chicken against the American standard with 120 kilograms of chicken per year. So you have to understand that we are actually not eating much meat, but what we are now doing is it's not about meat reduction. I mean, if it was me, I would also reduce it to zero, but it's actually more about meat prevention, because once these countries, like there are many emerging markets, countries like Nigeria, like India, China, once they are getting a little bit richer, they are putting it into meat. You know, the meat consumption goes high. And that is why global meat consumption is rising. If you're in Berlin or in Portland, Oregon, and or in Austin, yeah, you're one of the lucky few, but that's not the reality. The reality is meat consumption is rising. I think that's very important for the vegan community, that we are not winning the war right now.
Yeah, there's more meat eaten every year. It's not going down, that's for sure. And so that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about, though. When you first opened the restaurant in Nigeria, and there were no vegan restaurants in Lagos, combined with the fact that there's a lot of prestigiousness with meat, it means wealth, it means people are doing better. What was the reaction in the sense of like bringing in a vegan restaurant?
Yeah, of course, people were saying, are these people crazy or what? We love our meat. But I wasn't really so bothered about it because I heard the same 30 years ago in Germany. And you can relate to that. You know, Germany in the 90s was not much better, you know, and actually, I always say the awareness in Africa is even quite high, you know, because they love their meat. but they're having like an uneasy feeling. You know, they're realizing it's not so good. There are problems with meat. And that awareness is higher than Germany in the 80s or 90s. I know a friend of mine in Germany, he's called Dr. Tofu, and he was the first one who did tofu on a commercial scale in the 80s. They arrested him, you know, because they arrested him. That's
for what?
He's always telling that story. Yeah, for cooking something suspicious because he brought it from Japan, you know. So he was arrested a couple of times. So when it started here in Nigeria and we opened the first vegan restaurant and there was also no vegetarian restaurant, people were saying, you know, that's crazy. Why do you do that? But I knew kind of that time is on our side and I cannot be the only one. I know there are other returnees, as we call Africans that are coming back from abroad that lived in the US, in the UK, and they are having the health message. I knew that people want to reduce meat. And that's what happened from day one. 90% of our customers up to today are normal meat eaters that just want to reduce their meat. So the abuse was not that much. Of course, you get your funny looks and some comments and now and then still on social media, we are Nigerians, we are eating meat, but that's silly. I think the health message, everybody got it now, that you have to do something about your health, and then meat is a big part of that.
What year was it that you opened the restaurant?
2013. So in May, we are celebrating 8 years.
Before that, I mean, you're a journalist. Had you had any experience with food or restaurants? Or like what brought this on?
Yeah, so I was trying to make the switch to veganism, and I knew you need the support network, because if there's not one restaurant really where you can eat, or I always went to Lebanese restaurants, we have a few of them, or Indian restaurants, but even there you have this paneer stuff and this ghee all the time. I just wanted also a vegan burger. And what happened was I did a trip back then to Asia and landed in Thailand and then found my way road trip to Cambodia and Vietnam. And I had this app, Happy Cow, up to today. I love it, you know. And it was like a sightseeing trip. I basically explored the areas and cities with the app. Where's the next vegan place? And then I came back to Lagos and the same app showed me zero results. I said, come on. I mean, I'm living here in a city, Lagos, 20 million people. That's double the size of New York City. And there's not one vegan restaurant. And I told my partner, come on, even if I'm the only one eating in that restaurant, I'm saving the money going to all this Indian and Lebanese restaurants.
Well, wait, what did she say when you said, oh, we're going to open a restaurant now?
Yeah. So Bola is a full Nigerian and meat eater back then. And she said, that's crazy. But then I explained more. I told her that there's a trend coming and I see signs that signals that the health trend from America. I always say that trends end up also in Africa. It starts often in the US, then gets to Europe, and then it comes to Africa, you know? So the health trend, I saw it. Role models are becoming healthier. And so I knew it will come at some point. I think we're at the beginning now. The 8 years we have done the restaurant, it was kind of a long journey. The restaurant has always done fairly well. Just 2 years into the restaurant, we thought, how can we expand? Because people reached out to us from different parts of the country and even from other countries, that they want to have that experience. So we came up with the product because there's no meat substitutes.
Was there anything at all like across Africa in the terms of like plant-based meat?
Supermarkets, but there are not many. We don't have something like Walmart. I'm always trying to get people the right understanding. You know, we have our largest supermarket chain has 20 stores in the whole country with 200 million people. So most people are still buying food in open markets, the typical markets. You would call it farmers market, but huge market. That really African markets. Supermarkets is just now coming. It's less than 10% of the food is going through supermarkets. So it's a different, it's a different continent. So in those supermarkets, you have most of the stuff is imported. They're just basically buying products from the UK and the US. So what you have on the shelf in the US, you find it in those supermarkets, but just like 10% of those, you know, when you have 10 or 50 different brands of chips, we have too, you know. But slowly, then the first soy milks came, but meat substitutes, very rare up to today, because the problem is that they are frozen. A lot of things you don't think about, that most meat substitutes, they are in the cold chain, but there is basically no cold chain in Africa. There's no electricity, there's no cold chain. So all these supermarkets, they're thinking twice before they bring in frozen stuff, you know?
So you're at the restaurant and you're like, maybe we should just create an entire new food. How does this happen? It's a big step to go from restaurant to product.
Yes. So what we did was, when we started our restaurant, we tried to look what meat substitutes do we find. But like I said, it was very sporadic. They came in. Sometimes they had products, but then they were out. But then you cannot tell your customers that you don't have those burger patties now. So it was pretty quickly clear that we need to have our own products. And then we did some seitan stuff. We learned that tofu was okay. We made our tofu. Tofu is pretty straightforward, but you don't win anybody, any meat eater over with tofu. That's the thing. So the seitan, we had something, we made it fresh, so that worked a bit. It was more reliable than this supply from the supermarkets. And then we realized we need to work on the product. So what we basically do at the restaurant is, we are really proud cooking Nigerian dishes, because we want to make it accessible for Nigerians, not another fancy restaurant that caters for expatriates or something, you know? So really veganizing Nigerian dishes.
Give me an example of some Nigerian dishes that you are veganizing.
The food often really works like, you have a stew, you know, and then you have lots of different leaves. And that's where African food is so amazing, you know, like moringa leaves. You know, I'm sure a lot of people heard about moringa. It grows everywhere. And then we are just taking the leaf and they're making a stew out of it. So imagine that. That's like super food in a stew. Or melon seeds. You know, we are making a stew with melon seeds. It's interesting that African cuisine has not yet gotten the reputation, but it's really very nutritious. So you have your stew, and then you have a kind of a staple food, which is like manioc or tapioca, you call it, and then you mash it, you know, basically like mashed potatoes, and then you dip balls with your hands, we eat it with our hands, into the stew, you know. That's really the common food, stews, and then you have your starchy, your carbohydrate, something, and then you dip it in.
Okay.
And then, of course, a lot of rice, you know, that's the other side, rice with some stew. Now it's very common that people want to have meat with it, because it's prestigious thing, it's aspirational. When you talk to older Africans, especially in the villages, they will tell you, we don't used to eat a lot of meat. Red meat, maybe 3 times in a year when there was some festivity, you know, a wedding. They had a bit more fish. And then chicken. Nowadays, they eat chicken every day. That wasn't maybe every month in the old days. But now the mindset is, there has to be some piece of meat in the stew or on top of the rice, you know. And if it's not, that's the problem. That's when you're almost like, it's almost shameful if you have guests and you're not serving them, you know. And that's really where we are coming in now, that how can we destigmatize that and offer them something? And I think we have a lot of opportunities.
And so for you guys, though, that's where you came in and said, we're going to make our own. We're going to come up with a product.
Yeah. When we looked at veganizing Nigerian dishes, you could technically make this very well. I do that. Have the stews without any meat, because the moringa leaf is so, it's so wonderful, but it doesn't really work with the typical Nigerian taste, because they expect this chunky thing inside it. You know, they want a piece of meat in it. They don't need much. They don't want a T-bone steak or ribs or stuff. No. They just want a piece, chunk of meat in it. And that's where we're now coming in, that we developed a meat substitute here in Africa, made by us, you know, nothing imported, a burger patty that, how can you put a burger patty into a stew? You know, it doesn't work. We need to have our own product. And then we came up with this product, and it works, you know, because you have that chunky thing. And that's where I see lots of potential, because Africans actually, they don't really expect much. They just that brown thing that is chewy, you know, that you can drag, that's fine. You know, if as long as it has those qualities that you can drag it in your teeth and you can chew it, you know, that's good. That's really our bet now, that we might convince people to go for that, because what is really neat? It's a concept where it's chewy. The seasoning, the spicing, that is even meat that needs seasoning. The taste is not really the meat. You know, we can do the seasoning is easy. It's the texture. And that, like tofu or soy chunks, that doesn't work because it doesn't have this chewy. Nigerians, they really want to chew something, you know, like what's the suey, you know, like almost like leather-like,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So you make this and it's made with seitan?
Basically a mixed seitan with some other things, some soy in it. The thing now is it's dehydrated and it's shelf-stable in ambient temperature. So it's basically like a bag of pasta, you know, you can put it on your shelf and it's fine. It stays there for 6 months and it's good. And that really has some advantages. In the long run, it will really play into our hands because the meat markets are also, people are realizing they are very, and yeah, you need a kind of cold chain, which does not exist, but then what do? Of course, they're not throwing away the meat from yesterday, but they're using it the next day. That's how you get typhoid fever. And we are trying to be actually cheaper than meat, you know, which is another big thing. I'm always so annoyed when I buy a meat substitute abroad and it's more expensive than the normal meat. And that's definitely not how you're going to win over this kind of country. The prices are coming down, definitely, because still, even in Europe, in Germany, there are a lot of people that cannot afford a meat substitute. We have to really make it accessible for the lower income.
I agree.
A little bit less elitist, yeah.
In the US and Europe, meat is ridiculously cheap compared to everything else.
Yeah, of course, the subsidies come into play in the lobby, you know, but that shouldn't be an excuse, you know, because the resources you need, but you guys know more. I'm preaching to the converted, you know, but I think we need to be cheaper than meat, and especially in this emerging countries. I'm always trying to scare people a bit in the West. You know, if it's great that you have all these vegan restaurants in New York and big cities, but if you lose countries like Nigeria, India, and China, even if your vegan industry is growing by 10%, but if these countries eat 0.1% more meat, you're losing it, you know? And that's what's happening. You know? And we are sitting in this together. Sorry, that's one thing I'm telling people. It's not like, oh yeah, let Africa or China eat meat. No, what's going to happen is your meat producers, they are looking at other markets. They might see, okay, we're selling a little bit less now in the US, so let's ship it to Africa. It's the same like with the tobacco industry. When you guys became more healthy, they just ship the stuff, the same stuff to Africa and to China. You know, we want to eliminate the meat industry. But right now, we're just pushing them into other countries.
What's been people's reaction to V-Chunks?
I love it when people are coming and say, I can't believe that this is not meat. You're not saying the truth. You know, what kind of meat is it? You know, the concept of meat substitute is very new. Yeah, and even veganism as the term is new. I think the prejudices against meat substitute is less here. We don't need to compete with meat in that way. While you have all these ribs and slow cooked tender meat and T-bone steaks, which is really hard to replicate, we just need a chunk, you know, on top. And the feedback we're getting is as long as you have that, it's fine. That's the kind of leapfrogging idea that often comes. Like Africa never had phone landlines. They just went straight to cellular phones, you know, or we didn't have PCs. Now we went straight to laptops or mobile phones. That's a bit the analogy that we are not going into meat, but we are going straight into meat substitutes. But that is really visionary talk, if we can make that, and we have to make it. Because if they start ranching here and animal farming, that's a losing game. And it's happening. They are now building a lot of chicken farms because chicken is quick. You can grow it faster than cattle. So it's happening. Another thing is our population is like exploding. In the next 20 years, We are going to double our population on the continent. That's insane, you know, from 1 billion to 2 billion. How are you going to feed those people? And that's the thing, you know, even if we don't eat per head, per capita, if we don't eat much meat, but if you're now two people instead of one, you need a lot of meat.
You also do work with education.
Basically, we realized that a lot of things have to come together. You don't just start a restaurant, a vegan restaurant. You don't just start a vegan product, a meat substitute. There has to be awareness. It's a whole movement, you know. For us, really, awareness is the same like marketing. It's also a nutrition aspect because you need protein, you know, and people know that animals is a source of protein, which is true. But still, protein has to come from plants. And in Africa, we have a severe protein deficiency. It's not like you guys that you have, I mean...
No one in the U.S. actually has protein deficiency. Everyone eats so over amounts of protein. But in Africa, it's real. I mean, it's serious.
It's real. And we have serious malnutrition. You know, in Nigeria, 40% of the children are malnutritioned. It's crazy, you know, and even compared to other developing countries, we are only eating half of the protein, like compared to Asian countries. We need more protein from a nutrition development aspect. But now the thing is, where is the protein coming from?
Is that part of your education, is showing where to get protein, that protein exists aside from meat?
Yeah, so there's this belief that protein is really from animals, you know. They also know that protein can also be in beans. So what we are showing them, that actually beans has a lot of protein, and there are other products, you know, tofu, and even our product has double the amount of protein than beef. It's enlightening them about the plant-based protein sources. It's not only about reducing meat, it's also all these sugary drinks. I believe in a kind of holistic aspect and processed food, but most people don't really eat processed food because, thank God, we don't have this food deserts, you know? It's even the other way around, because you still have these local markets everywhere. Here we have this irony that people are saving money to go to KFC. It's that crazy, you know? Sometimes I'm really have to remind myself that this is reality. Like, people are saving money to go on Christmas Day to Kentucky Fried Chicken because it's a luxury for them. While I many years ago, I was in Detroit for a week, I had to drive literally 10 miles to get a fresh tomato. That's when I realized this.
It's true.
Honestly, I had to go on the highway, and then I found a Trader Joe's like 10 miles away. You know, it was sad because, I mean, those are the less privileged areas. I know offshore there's some rich parts of Detroit. I wasn't lucky to be in that one. That's when I realized this food, I couldn't imagine that. Not being from Europe and Africa. It's crazy.
It's insane.
I couldn't find a fresh tomato. What I'm always trying to say is, Africa, we have our own problems, but it also exists somewhere else, you know, in Germany and America.
Absolutely.
And there's a plan behind it, you know, because the subsidized meat, even in Germany, people are wondering, can I afford a vegan diet?
And people here say that all the time. I can't afford to be vegan.
It's also because it's quality food.
Yes.
I think it's not by coincidence, you know, but it's a different discussion.
For Veggie Victory, for V-Chunks, where now are they available?
Yeah, shipment is on the way to the U.S. We're getting requests. Of course, our core market is Nigeria, and we're looking in, we're doing Africa. We just shipped to Kenya, South Africa. In Africa, it's everywhere the same. They have different, of course, cuisines, but the meat, our V-Chunks, it works for that, you know. But then, interestingly, we're getting a lot of requests from the U.S., the U.K. We're selling now in the U.K., even France, because the African diaspora is quite numerous, and even African Americans, because there was an article, I think Washington Post a while ago, that the African American community is the fastest growing vegan community.
Yes.
In
the US, yeah.
Yeah, that is very interesting. I don't know the reasons for it. You know, I have my ideas. I can definitely say that we don't have enough products, black-owned companies. I know a few, but they're not many. Of course, like always, minorities are not well represented in startups in general. I mean, we are not saying no, we are a business. You know, that Veggie Victory is a business. So if we sell in the US, and of course there are Nigerians there, you know, or other Africans or Caribbeans or African Americans. And somebody also sent, and that was a Caucasian, and he made a Philly steak with that. He said it's perfect, you know?
Amazing. That's amazing. So what's next? Where are you guys going?
Yeah, so innovation is of course, is super important. So this one has a wheat, and we are producing some wheat in Nigeria, but not enough, you know, and also because our farmers cannot compete with like Europe subsidized or American subsidized farmers. So wheat, we have to import it. So we definitely would like to have a more locally sourced raw material. And there are many, you know, there are cashews, not the nuts, but the apples, actually. You can make something out of that. But we need to get the texture right. If you don't convince the consumer, well, he won't buy your product, no matter how poor he is. You know, it doesn't work like, oh, you are poor, buy soy chunks. You know, the meat is for the richer people. You know, in Africa, nobody will tell you he's poor. You know, they're very aspirational people. They rather eat only a quarter of a piece of meat than a soy chunk, you know, if it doesn't taste well, you know. So... So yeah, we have to deal with consumers, you know, and which is good. Yeah, so we need more. Definitely, we have to come up with products, definitely different flavors, also kind of fish substitute. Fish is still a big thing. So a lot will come. We are a product company, so the innovation is what will keep us ahead. At some point, we will have a competition, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And since 2013, when you opened the restaurant, have you noticed change like across the board in just terms of interest and people really wanting to focus on health and veganism? Has it picked up?
The health message is very, very strong, you know, and I think the pandemic was another booster because it literally showed people that if your health is not fine, your chips are going down fast. The thing is, once you're unhealthy in this kind of countries, it's a big problem because you can't afford it. The healthcare, the public healthcare is in disarray. Where we were before, there was a general hospital. They have one dialysis machine. I think in the whole country, we have like 100 ventilators. You don't want to get on a ventilator with corona. You basically have to be a millionaire to get get a ventilator here. It's unrealistic. People know that once you're sick, it's a death sentence. You know, it ruins your family finances. People earn $100 a month. What are you going to do? Buy blood pressure pills with it? So you better be healthy. And they know that food is a big thing there, and meat, they know it. I scare people. I don't have a problem with that. You know, the kind of frozen chicken that we have here is coming from China that was killed 2 years ago. And it's now, and it's put in formalin, you know, it's mummified. And then they're selling it here because they want cheap meat, or the rotten meat from Europe that is then being shipped here, pumped up with all the chemicals. They're using chemicals also already now here in the farming, chickens in particular. They're cooking the meat with paracetamol, you know, because then it cooks faster. That's like a chemical cocktail,
it's like,
you know.
It's like they can't stop coming up with just like the most horrific things.
Sprinkling the meat in the markets with insecticides, you know, so that and then you're eating that, you know. I think we have the arguments on our side, and people are really getting, and you ask that, the health message is becoming stronger and stronger, you know. And then luckily we all have also some role models, Beyoncé going on vegan diet, and they notice it, you know, with social media, Kevin Hart and all that, Lewis Hamilton, Lionel Messi, you know. And now the thing is, they need the product. They need a bit of guidance. But that's similar. If you live in the Midwest and you suddenly say I'm vegan, you don't have that support. It's hard, you know.
It's hard.
So we are not yet far from being mainstream. We're just starting, and that's, I think, our unique story, that we are the first plant-based food tech company, as we call ourselves, in Nigeria and even in Africa. There's one meat substitute company in South Africa, but they're very catering for the white demographic, not really going into Africa as we all know it, you know?
Yeah, it's incredible. And it's exciting and it'll change lives.
Yeah, and I think it's for us, it's really rewarding because you can actually, you can change. I don't want to sound dramatic, but you know that you're making an impact. You know, somebody that has blood pressure, and we all know with a plant-based diet, you can reverse it, you know, and it can literally save that person's life, even in America, but you have at least, you have all the medicine there. And then for the future of this continent, if we start the animal farming, I think then we are completely, then we lost it completely. We can't even afford it anyway. That's the good news. We can't even afford it. Either way, I think it's a no-brainer. We are going into the right direction. But it takes time, and we are not many, you know, to do that. And it's a huge, yeah, the finances. I mean, we are lucky that we're getting some attention now, but I mean, it's compared to the vegan industry abroad is still very sketchy here.
I know, but you know what? You and I both remember what it was like in Germany back in the day, and look at it now. Like,
and I always say, it's just great to be in this community because everyone I meet, it's amazing. You know, you can relate, and it's positive.
It really is,
and it unites us. We realize we are in the same boat because the thing is, if you want to save animals, it does not make logical sense if you want to save animals in the US, you know, or in Germany. Because if you say, okay, Africa is far, but if your passion is animals, you have to fight for animal rights around the planet, you know? You can't just fight for animal rights in Germany. It doesn't make sense, you know?
Hakim, thank you so much for today. This is awesome. I'm
thank
so
you,
excited.
Beth. Yeah.
To learn more about Hakim and Veggie Victory, go to our website, speciesunite.com. There are links to everything. We are on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare minute and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people to find the show. If you'd like to support the podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. Go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click donate. I'd like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knudsen, Natalie Martin, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, and Anna Kollner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful day.